kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Happy New Year, everybody, and welcome to the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. A little quick review episode before I head off to MAGFest and we take a goddamn week off. Starting things off with Chris Taylor. Chris, how are you doing?
Hi, Happy New Year.
How's 2018 treating you so far?
Did you like that's my impression of a noisemaker. This is going to be the whole hour.
I mean, we have time to kill, so why not, right? We need one of those yelling goats. Oh, and I have some baller-ass sunglasses on from the game Party Planet. Can't show those off to anyone. So sad.
Make it the cover of the episode.
No one wants to see my face.
Oh.
How's things sad going? Joke. How was your New Year's?
Oh, pretty good so far. We just moved, so we're kind of, you know, looking across a sea of boxes and trying to figure out, you know, what to do next. So, and this is the cold week in Texas, so things are actually below freezing right now, and our heater needs to be fixed already.
All right, so, what are you guys considering cold down there?
Like 32 or less, like is about what it is right now. I don't know what it is right now, actually. It's cold compared to the temperature where water is liquid.
Because I think my area today was sitting at 2.
Oof.
Yeah, my mom called to wish me a happy new year last night, and she's like, "And what's the temperature like up there?" I'm like, "Well, both degrees are pretty cold right now."
That's pretty good. Also, I thought this story was going to go in a different direction and she would have called you, but your phone was frozen.
Oh, God. No, but our door lock has been freezing. I went to leave and lock the door when I left and it wouldn't lock because the actual, like the, what the fuck do you call the part that sticks out that holds the door closed? The little thing.
The bolt?
When you turn the handle, it's the thing that goes in.
The bolt?
No, it's not like the deadbolt. It's just like the door.
All I know about locks is that you move the left stick to around and then you move the right stick around.
Still playing Skyrim, huh?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, did you start your Skyrim special Zelda playthrough?
No, I've decided I'm going to start that a little later, like maybe this month, but maybe not. I'll announce it on everything and such. But yeah, I'm going to play through Skyrim, the Nintendo Switch version of Skyrim, as a character that is basically Link from the first Legend of Zelda. I'm only going to use items that you can use in the original Legend of Zelda.
Like what?
Like, okay, so for one, of course, the basis for it is going to be the amiibo, like, special items, so the Master Sword, the Champion Tunic, and the Hylian Shield. So, and I'm going to make a Bosmer that looks like Link, but I'm going to probably, so I don't get shut down, I'm going to name him something like, I don't know, Lank or Lornk.
I was going to say you could go Lonk. That's always a
Lonk, yeah.
Popular one.
I kind of like Lank.
About Lornk? L-E-R-N-K. Lornk.
Yeah. I'm taking submissions right now for what to name this guy. He's gonna
send your submissions to Chris Taylor Skyrim Run at something.org.
Yeah, something.org. write that down. Not something.com, it's .org.
Get it right.
So throughout the course of the game, I'm gonna try and get through the main quest and all of the other kind of things that you can do in the game. Like there's like a million quests and I'm going to do them with only those items, bow and arrow and so spells that are basically approximately like a candle and the bomb. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be flames and fire rune, and any other magic has to come out of a staff because you get the magic staff in that game. And then, like, there's a couple other little tricky things. Like, I'm only going to use two potions. like when I go adventuring, only going to be able to use two potions because you only get two potions in that game.
Oh, that's going to be hard as fuck.
Yeah. And also, I decided that because you can sometimes find them in the game, you know, I'm not going to seek them out or anything, but I plan on at some point carrying around 16 human hearts. So, did you like that?
Oh my god, that's fantastic. Yeah. All right, here's a question. What are you going to do about fast traveling?
I can fast travel. I might as well. I don't know. What would be the benefit of not doing that?
No, just because you can't really fast travel in the original game, except if you save and quit and then you start back at the beginning of the dungeon.
You can if you blow the flute. So
to
I can
where,
do
though?
If you blow the magic flute in Legend of Zelda, it takes you to, like, you know, any one of these 8 different points on the map. I'm like, that's good enough.
Then how about you can only fast travel to dungeons? You can't fast travel to towns.
Ooh, that does sound pretty interesting. Yeah, it's going to be a really...
Or the very starting point, like the town that you're getting strung up in at the beginning before the dragon shows up. You could fast travel there because that's the beginning of the game.
I feel like before I get the Master Sword, I should find a wooden sword and use it. They actually have them and they're terrible. But you know, wooden sword.
I would just go with the Master Sword. Don't cripple yourself too much here.
Right.
Anyway, we should probably talk about games, though, shouldn't we?
I guess. Thought we were just going to have a nice little midnight chat about my Skyrim dealings.
You said you're not ready to start it yet. Maybe when you're ready to start the stream, we could get you on. You could talk about it. You could talk about your plans, when you're going to be streaming, all that other fun stuff.
Yeah, deal. We'll do that.
Because it's not like you aren't on the show on pretty much a weekly basis the way it is.
Hey, I'm fine with it.
Oh, man. All right. So first game to talk about tonight is called Fallen Legion Flames of Rebellion, developed and published by Yummy Yummy Tummy, which is an incredible company name.
It's a great name.
Released December 12th on the PS4 for $19.99, cross-buy with the Vita, coming to Steam this January 5th, so it's just about here. A bundle is available for $29.99 and includes Fallen Legion Sins of an Empire for the PS4 as well as Fallen Legion Flames of Rebellion for PS4 and Vita. Travel through a ravaged continent and rally support to take back what the Empire took from you. Explore gorgeous hand-drawn lands inhabited by rival soldiers and savage manticores. Rule your empire between fierce battles, make difficult decisions, and witness the consequences of your choices. Chris, what did you think of Fallen Legion Flames of Rebellion?
Oh my gosh, there's so much to think about. So Fallen Legion, Flames of Rebellion, I only just learned today is the sequel to a different game.
Fallen Legion, Sins of an Empire.
Yes. So here I have been playing this game, and I was feeling like a lot of the story was sort of being kept away from me. They're like, we don't want you to see this. You don't need to see this. Just play the game. So what Fallen Legion's Flame of Rebellion is, in a mechanical way, is basically a kind of mix of a tactics RPG, and a kind of live action menu-based RPG, like with the, you know, no real menu wait time. So like a Tales game, like a Tales of Destiny or whatever. Coupled with kind of a Final Fantasy Tactics style thing almost. And I don't know. It is definitely something I've never seen before, like combined in quite the way that it is combined in. You go into the battle with your guy who's a Legatus Landor.
What a name.
Yeah. And who, by the way, I thought was going to be the bad guy. Turns out he is the hero. He's kind of a hooded edgelord with magical powers. And as best I can tell, and he's a general of an army, I guess, due to events that happened in the last game. And he's either leading a rebellion or going against a rebellion. I couldn't quite tell. But either way, you go into battle and it's him, and then he has one, like two or three of several different, like, so far all female warriors who fight for him. And you go into battle with up to three, and their actions are, you basically push the corresponding button to where they are on the battlefield. So, like, your one character will be the circle button, another character will be the cross button, another character will be the square button. And the amount of moves that they can do go up on a timer, like a little circle that fills in. And when it gets to a certain block, this is actually a little bit like how they do it in I Am Setsuna as well. Then you can use a move, like use their move, and depending on the combination of moves that you use across the different characters, you may trigger a combo, you may inflict some kind of status effect on the enemy, and it goes pretty deep on, like, different things that you can change and augment with those characters. So, like, sometimes in a battle you'll win a jewel that will make your one character go into glass cannon mode where they do a lot more attack and a lot less defense. And so you can put that character in the back row. And then basically there's a lot of strategizing on placement, and you can switch up the leader on the fly, especially if they're starting to get injured. Mm-hmm. And then in the back, your character, your main guy, is controlled by the triangle button, where he can either cast a really powerful attack spell into the crowd, the din of enemies, or use a heal spell on his characters, or even revive them if they get killed. And if all your characters get killed, then your guy goes down in one hit. So that's how that goes.
Interesting.
Yeesh. So the whole game is basically like you go from location to location, and in each one you just do a different battle or do a cutscene or something like that. There doesn't appear to be any kind of like experience points or anything like that in the game. Plus, even though the damage is shown in numbers, like you don't actually know what the number of hit points that you have is.
So it's just like a guessing game with random numbers there to kind of make it think like you know what you're doing?
Yeah, it's got the bar. So, you know, if the bar goes away, then obviously you die. So yeah, it was basically like I spent a good few hours like in this game, and I never quite knew exactly what I was doing, but I kept winning battles and like figuring out combos and like, again, doing those on the fly strategies. So I feel like this is a game that like you kind of don't really need to think about so much. You just kind of do what they say and just remember it from time to time.
Just enjoy the ride.
Yeah, you just kind of go along with it. And in fact, once I did that and didn't worry about, like, you know, replaying stages or anything, because they do rate you at the end of a stage, and sometimes you get a better prize if you get a better rating.
Mm.
And the only thing that wound up doing for me is just making me better practiced at the defense move, which I actually really like the defense move, because you push the L button and all of your characters throw up like this kind of laser shield. I guess it's a magic shield or something. And if the enemy hits it with a projectile, it bounces back to them, and then you can launch a combo off of that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and like for a lot of the harder enemies, it's actually super necessary to be able to use that blocking and countering maneuver. So you end up not just smashing buttons, but you have to like master the timing of it.
So,
but apart from that,
in a genre like RPGs where no one in the world ever really uses the defend mechanic, this game really uses the defend mechanic.
It's the first game since the Seventh Saga in 1994, yes, to actually utilize defense.
Oh man, well, here's a question for you. We've established that this is a sequel to the first game. This is the first game on the Vita. So okay. Vita gamers have never gotten the first game. I know you haven't played the first game. Is this game approachable and easy to get into not having played the first one? Does it fill you in on the first game?
Of course, like I said, I didn't know until today that there even was a first game. But I will say that this game does have that sequel-y thing in that it does assume that you already know a lot of lore.
Mm.
However, a lot of lore is given in the load screens, which actually go by too quickly to read. So they'll throw you up
so
like
three. So it has good loading times.
Yes, very good loading times, but then they decide to like put most of like the catch-up story in the load screens. And so it's like two paragraphs of reading and I'll be like halfway through one paragraph and then it'll be done. And it's like I kind of made a game out of like trying to read and absorb like even one piece of information while it was loading, and I failed. So I will say the gist of the game is definitely there. Like you get the sense of the characters and their conflicts, and of course the game introduces the kind of antagonists sort of on their own. Like they aren't like it's the return of the evil guy or something. Like it doesn't really do that.
It's, He's back.
If nothing else, it starts off with a book of questionable intentions, a talking book. So, nice. Yeah. And, you know, so it's kind of a, it sort of follows the intrigue of like, deciding what you're going to do with this royal person who's kind of going under the influence of this book, who's not clearly evil because it's trying to help. But you don't know. And actually, that's another mechanic, a whole other side of the game is that you decide from time to time, like really important decisions while you're running from battle to battle. It goes down on a timer. So you have about 15 seconds to decide to like execute someone or like spy on someone or, you know, do these other things. And those things actually affect your army's overall morale, which is on another gauge with no numbers. It also like determines like what kind of items you end up getting, and sometimes it even seems to actually decide what characters you get in the game. So there's a lot of decision making that affects probably all the way up to the ending, I'm sure, because it seems to be saying that, and that reminds me a whole lot of Valkyrie Profile.
Nice. So overall, $20. What is your thoughts on this one?
$20. I would say. Maybe try and seek out the first game and play it because they seem like they're pretty familiar, or maybe even try and grab that bundle when it's available. But on its own, it's certainly a fun and unique RPG that I really quite like. The music's fantastic. It's that kind of sort of Japanese RPG music mixed with metal guitars and such. So that's the thing like what Kemco likes to do right now.
Nice. Yeah, I know the first game right now, as we're recording this, the first game is only on PS4 with this sequel that we're talking about available on PS4 and Vita. I know the second game is coming to Steam. I'm not sure if the first game is included with that as well. And then I think we were saying this before the show, but both games bundled together are going to be releasing on the Switch as well.
Yeah, and I think that's probably like what I myself am probably going to do, only because I am really, really, really like crazy about playing games in the sequence of release. Mm-hmm. So like I always try to start from the very beginning, but I know a lot of people don't have that hang up. And I will say this game holds together very well on its own. However, just understand that there's probably going to be parts of the story where you're going to be like, oh, okay. And maybe they'll explain it later in a part of the game I'm not at yet. So
nice. Well,
either way, it's easy enough to pick up on, though.
Sounds good. And maybe one day Yummy Yummy Tummy will bring this to Xbox as well, considering it's on fucking everything else.
Do it, Yummy Yummy Tummy.
Yeah, just so I can say your name more.
Don't leave those bone players hanging.
Anyway, next game to talk about is called Sparkle Unleashed, developed and published by our friends at 10 Tons. This one released Christmas Day on the Switch for $7.99. A secluded world of mystery has succumbed to an ominous darkness. You must travel through the fallen lands, light magical braziers, and banish the darkness once and for all. Can you carve a path of light through the darkness?
Oh my gosh.
That sounds so epic for what the Sparkle series is.
Yeah, a little overwrought, if you will. Okay, so Sparkle Unleashed, it's basically, it's a kind of puzzle game that I think it once you see it in action, you'll be like, oh, it's that. I get it. It was on, the way I played it was on the DS way back in the day, and it was called Luxor, made by somebody else. And it like there was a whole series because, I mean, it's DS puzzle games are like they'll come out with any 12 different games for any single concept. So this is 10 Tons crack at the Luxor formula, which 10 Tons, of course, we've talked about many, many times, and they are really on top of their game in terms of making nice, quick, addictive sort of puzzly games. And this is no exception. However, it is a little bit different in presentation from their normal stuff. So instead of being like cartoony style sort of weirdness, this is actually a really dressed up and very aesthetically pleasing sort of puzzle game. Like, they really decide to go into the high def thing, and like all the balls are like really awesomely textured, and like the music is nice and like atmospheric, and the backgrounds look really great, the maps look really great, and it sort of has this semblance of a story going for it. But really, I mean, all of this dressing is on top of a salad that is a solid puzzle game. And so the concept of it is basically you have a colored ball at the bottom of the screen that you can position anywhere on the left to right axis. And you shoot that ball at this sort of like snake of balls, like all of like just this stack of balls that are being pushed through sort of a tunnel. And whenever three of those balls are connected and they're the same color, they disappear. And let's say, you know, you got like two red balls, and then there's two blue balls on one side and one blue ball on the other side, and you shoot a red ball into the two other red balls, they disappear, and then the blue balls will click together, and they'll also disappear, and then you get a combo.
Blue balls.
Yeah. So, yeah, you get the you get those combos, and then they disappear, you get bonus points. And actually, you get cool items like this kind of laser thing, like I guess it's a magic spell or something, and it zaps any one of the balls out of the way. So it's all about making all of those balls disappear before they get all the way across the tunnel. And what this game does that I actually quite like as well is that after a few stages, it introduces things like throwing two winding like snake things at you, at, you know, like two winding rows of balls like at the same time, and so you have to kind of manage both of them. And so the other thing is that, you know, you got the one colored ball that's going to be, you know, your shooter. You can also flip it around to another color, but you can only do two. So it, like, maybe you'll have a red ball at the front and then a blue ball at the back, and you can swap them around and, you know, do different things like that. The game doesn't really deviate from that very much. Like, at best, it just gets harder and more elaborate. Like, this game does like to get more elaborate than I think the Luxor series, from which maybe it's even an older game than that. I don't know. That's just, like I said, the thing I know it from.
I don't know which came first, because there's, you know, Sparkle and Zuma as well. And then, like, Zuma is the one in the middle that you circle around. And then Luxor is the one at the bottom where you shoot up. Those are like the two different marble shooting puzzle games. And Sparkle is kind of in the Zuma sector of the genre, where Sparkle Unleashed is on the Luxor side.
Okay.
But bottom line, they're match three marble shooting puzzle games. And if you see a picture of it, you'll be like, oh, it's that.
It's that. And that... Honestly, I mean, I could sit here and talk all day about this game, but ultimately it'll just come to my review being, it's that.
Yeah. So
you like that, go get it.
So $8, your verdict?
I mean, it's that, but it is, but it is the nicest looking, sounding, and the tightest controlled that I've seen. So I say go ahead and grab it if this is your kind of thing. Because, I mean, the DS versions, for as nice as they are kind of messy. Yeah. Like, they looked and sounded a little rough. This game is gloriously put together.
Does it have touch screen control?
I forgot to check.
How do you not touch the screen instinctively with every Switch game?
Because there's no stylus. I need to get me a stylus, because I don't want to touch a screen with my finger, because then I'll be wiping it with my t-shirt forever and ever.
Put a screen protector on it.
I know.
Then wipe it off.
Maybe I should do
it's
that.
It's a touch screen. It's meant to be touched.
Well, let's
touch.
Touch this.
Touch. Touch.
Yeah.
All right, so next
time. I will come back next time and update the audience on whether this is. Yeah, I will.
Also, learn to use your touch screen.
Yeah.
But next game is called Guns, Gore, and Cannoli, one of the SML Hall of Fame inductees, developed and published by Crazy Monkey Studios. This one released on the Switch December 21st for $9.99. Welcome to Thugtown, circa 1920, the height of Prohibition. Set against the gangster heyday of the Roaring Twenties, lose yourself an exciting, elaborate tale of the underground and the underworld. Experience friendship, betrayal, vengeance, and witness firsthand the rise and fall of a criminal mastermind. This is survival horror, wise guy style. Capiche? Such a good write-up.
Right?
So what did you think of Guns, Gore, and Cannoli?
Okay, so Guns, Gore, and Cannoli. It sounds a lot more elaborate than the game that I was playing for the first few levels.
Well, so did the Sparkle Unleashed write-up.
Right. So the thing about this one, it's basically a sort of hand-drawn animation platformer shooter kind of thing. What I liked about it is that the controls are very, very good. When it comes to, games with tight action, I like a game that feels good, and you know, that's something that's sort of hard to tell in videos and such. So I can definitely say that this game felt really good. The jumps feel good. The shots feel good. Everything is good in that. The animation is super cool. The guns are really, really cool. So the problems that I ran into with Guns, Gore, and Cannoli is, one, I kind of wanted it to be funnier. Like, I was having a hard time discerning, like, any real jokes. Like, the guy just talks like a tough guy, and the zombies just run at you, and they're like, rah, rah, rah.
I thought it was a fairly humorous game. I really enjoyed the humor in the game.
It's humorous, yes. It is humorous, but is it funny? Like, Stick It to the Man was funny. That game is really, really funny. And I was sort of expecting a little bit of that because the game's like, there's so many things about the 20s that it could make fun of, but they just kind of just crowd in all this aesthetic, and like the zombies are sometimes flappers, and that's funny. Sailor guys and leatherhead football players, which are super annoying. So like, I don't know, there might be something I just sort of missed in the writing in this game, but it didn't really... You know, the whole time I was just kind of like, okay, this is more stuff. And so I guess it failed to charm me. Maybe it will charm you. The other thing about
well, humor is subjective, so
yeah,
it's just not your style of humor.
Yeah, yeah. And so the other part about it is that the so it drops you all these guns, and you can find like hidden guns, and they're so fun to use. Like, there's a shotgun that like just really blasts everyone back. I really like that you get a kick move, so when the zombies start crowding around you, because some of them are like those super fast, like what's that movie, the Will Smith movie, I Am Legend or something?
Oh yeah,
with the fast zombies.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like got those style of like fast zombies, and it's got like the slow lumbering zombies, and like when they go all gang up on you, you can use a kick move to kick them back, and then you know, blow them away with a shotgun, and that's really satisfying. The machine gun is cool. There's like two different machine guns. There's a cool flamethrower, and I really like the voice sample. That actually was kind of funny to me. Like, there's a voice sample they use when enemies or people burn up, and it made me laugh.
So you're sadistic.
I guess it wasn't sadistic enough. No, so but the thing is that because it's a survival horror game, I feel like you really don't get enough ammo to really enjoy these weapons. I found myself just using the infinite use pistol like throughout the whole thing, especially because the whole thing with the game is that you get double damage if you score a headshot. And the game doesn't really differentiate between what bullets do what kind of damage. So And your guy just so happens to shoot his pistol at headshot range for most of the other characters, or so for most of the other enemies. So I wound up just like sitting there doing headshots with a pistol, like for multiple levels. Like I was eventually like, oh, I wonder what would happen if I use a shotgun here. And like there are clearly spots where they wanted me to like throw a Molotov cocktail and stuff. And I was like, I only have four of them. I don't want to waste some Molotov. Oh, right, fine. It made me laugh. So I was like, I really wish there was like two or three times the amount of ammo and that you could just really wail on these guys. Like, I feel like that would be more fun. However, I soon realized that maybe an aspect I was missing in this game is the fact that it's up to four players at the same time, which is, to me, I was like, oh, that's a game maker right there. Like doing a shooting platformer with multiple guns and four people wailing at the same time. I was like, oh, that's what I got to get together. So I feel like in playing this largely one player, I kind of maybe missed out on what made this game a Hall of Famer, you know?
Yeah, which is, could definitely be the case. I know the bulk of when I played it was single player, but I you know, when I got special weapons, I used them because you would find more ammo eventually.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I felt like
you just have that RPG mindset where it's like, oh, I got a potion. I can't ever use this.
I'm hoarding.
I have 300 elixirs. I will never touch a single one of them. I'm just going to use standard potions instead. I'm going to use 8 of them to restore the amount of health that one single high potion would have given me.
Exactly. So, like I said, there's things that I liked and there's things that I was kind of like, I don't get it. But, ultimately, I think that this is a really good game, because zombies in the 20s, for one, that's fun. And like I said, it's a really good feeling game. And I feel like with three other players on deck, like couch multiplayer, like that really, I mean, if you've got four or three other friends that will play this with you, that's definitely a game to get.
Yeah, and with the Switch having two controllers built in, you can play co-op out of the box.
Exactly. And and I love that, like, one of the players, I don't know if it's the default player 3 or player 2. I only got up to 3 players because I have 3 controllers. But he's in a sports jacket, like a long sports jacket, kind of looks like maybe a trench coat, and then just like his boxers underneath for no reason. Just this middle-aged guy in whitey tidy, or like in white boxers.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's
they
really
need pink hearts on him.
Yeah,
hey, that could be the sequel. You never know, because they
guns gore and more cannoli.
I think it's just guns gore and cannoli too.
But oh,
I can always tell him, hey, if you guys aren't, you know, all in on the name, Guns, more, and cannoli.
And I think maybe a little bit of this was coming off of playing Bleed, which was much more the single-player experience I wanted. That is to say, infinite ammo, just constant bullets blazing, and just, like, frantic.
Yeah.
This game is a little more, like, survival-paced. So, even though it was a platformer, it's like you're not really trying to run through it too quickly, because otherwise you'll get overwhelmed. So it's trying not to get overwhelmed at that sense.
So it's
too.
Entirely your fault for expecting something that it's not. Got it.
Yeah.
Well, overall, $10. What do you think?
Oh yeah, $10. Get it. If you like zombie stuff, if you like 20 stuff, which, you know, who doesn't? It's like everyone's favorite pre-depression decade.
Hey, we're almost back to the 20s too.
I know, we're so close. We're about to relive all this, folks, so you might as well. You might as well.
Oh god, yeah, we're about to enter a depression, I know that.
I'm already there.
Oh yay.
Yay.
Oh, good stuff. Yeah, I really, really, really enjoyed this game on Xbox, obviously, because I gave it one of our Hall of Fame slots.
Yeah,
It's awesome to see it on the Switch. I'm probably going to end up picking it up again just because I kind of want to play it at MAGFest with some friends.
Yeah, I'm going to definitely take this over to a friend's house and couch co-op it. And then I'll probably have like this insane glowing review.
Nice.
Where it's like, this is the best game ever. Ha ha.
Nice. And either way, we're going to have to keep our eyes peeled for the sequel because I cannot wait for that one.
Oh, yeah. I feel like this series has so much potential, so I feel like they're really gonna kick it out this time.
Kick out the jams.
Kick out the jams.
Oh, man. Well, Chris, always good having you on the show. Do you have any resolutions for 2018?
Is it over yet? Actually, I wrote a post last year on the 1st and on Facebook, and I said, when is 2017 going to be over? And then I reposted it today, and I said, it's over! So that's kind of how I feel about years and such. I'm going to stream more, for sure. That's going to be part of my goals. Stream more.
Plug yourself. I know you like doing it. Plug yourself.
Twitch.tv/LierXAgerate. Like the Earthbound character, LierXAgerate. Go and find me. Or you can find me on Facebook as Enrich Flavor. Also Twitter as Enrich Flavor. I usually get linked, those pages get linked in these episodes. So just clickety click.
All right, next up, we have a preview of the game Until None Remain, developed and published by DWS, released December 19th on Steam Early Access for $9.99. Until None Remains is a futuristic multiplayer third-person shooter in a battle royale or last man standing format. Matches pit weaponless players against one another in a deathmatch that continues until only one player remains. Players must rush to acquire equipment to defeat the competition. Covering this one, our good friend Royal Sefton. Royal, how are you doing?
I remain.
You remain? I'm curious. They say that the battles go until one player remains, but the name is Until None Remains.
That's the part I'm having the hardest time trying to understand. So if he gets down to the last man, is it like you kill yourself and then the game's over? None now remain? Or,
maybe.
Or do you not exist and therefore you never remained in the first place? So once everybody else is dead, none remain? Or I don't know. I don't know if it's a philosophical thing or somebody didn't think that one through.
Well, with what you're saying, the developer's initials of DWS, that S could stand for Shyamalan. You were yes, dead it's the whole time.
Exactly. It's a battle royale with a twist ending. I'm going to name my character Bruce Willis now.
Nice. So tell me, what spoiler. Is this game?
So this is, it's kind of a quasi-Halo-ish, at least in terms of look, battle royale, last man standing, chase cam deathmatch. You start in a lobby, and usually in the lobby there's somebody trying to kill you with a knife. Just for fun. If you're fortunate enough to get into a lobby with players, doesn't always happen. And then you're dropped into an area that, starts out fairly large with tables of weapons and occasional armor and a few buildings in which you can find some more of that same stuff as well as some healing gear. And as you play, every few minutes, the arena gets smaller and smaller. So you can't traverse outside certain bounds or, you die. It's a one death ordeal. Once you are killed, you exit the game. You do not respawn. Your character's fairly hardy though, so it takes more than one shot to bring you down. And as you acquire armor and health, it becomes a little harder to kill you, obviously. But there are explosives and other things that can make quick work of you too. Also, there are vehicles that you can jump onto, and I actually ran somebody over with one that was kind of fun. And also, you know, some like scaffolds around the buildings you can climb up and take cover and try sniping and things like that too.
So this is sounding a lot like pretty much the rest of the battle royale games we see out there, like PUBG. With more yeah. of a behind the person camera angle for the combat?
Yes, it's entirely chase cam. If there's a way to do first person in this, I didn't see how. The way the camera's positioned kind of reminds me of like Resident Evil 4, except you have full strafing and mouse aiming and all that stuff, you know, just where you are in relation to the screen. Kind of messes with my aiming a little bit because it seems like the reticle's slightly off.
I was going to say, some of the screenshots I see kind of remind me of Dead Space with the camera angle.
Yeah, there you go. That's a better comparison. Thank you. That pretty much hits the nail on the head. That's what it plays like and looks like. It's kind of funky and very obviously early access in some of the things that are implemented. Like I said, the reticle feels a little off when aiming, especially with the knife. It's really kludgy.
What was that word?
Kludgy.
I've never heard that word before.
Yeah, it doesn't feel precise. It feels very, very, very ugly, very unwieldy.
Look at you expanding vocabulary on the SML podcast.
It's edutainment. It's not just about games. It's a learning experience.
Kick off your 2018 with a new word in your vocabulary. With kludgy.
By the word kludgy. Also pronounced kludgy. If you're royal.
This kludgy has been brought to you by Royal Sefton.
So anyway, it's very much an early access game. I gotta say it. Conceptually, I like it, but if you think of PUBG as kind of like the gold standard, this is very much like an uncarved block of bronze at best. We're not quite there yet.
Well, to be fair, PUBG has been in early access for quite a while, and this has been in early access for 3 weeks.
Yes, exactly. That is a very fair assessment to make. So, given that, I'm hoping that there's going to be a lot more to this. What we currently have are two arenas. We have basically one character that can't really be customized. And we have one server. And it seems like every time I drop in the lobby, with one or two exceptions, it's empty. The game will backfill with bots, which is handy, you know, so you can actually do something. But the bot AI is kind of brain dead. It'll just sit there and continue to shoot you till you die. Doesn't really take cover, doesn't do a whole lot else. So if this had more players, I think this would kind of grow, and you end up with a catch-22 situation. If the game feels a little too rough, people aren't encouraged to play, you don't get players, without any players, you have a multiplayer game that nobody's playing. So it doesn't grow. So it would be to the developer's benefit to make sure that they're really doing something as far as not only getting people involved, you know, if maybe they need like free play days or something to encourage that. And I don't know what the server picker looks like, but it seems to be pretty arbitrary. When you first start up, you basically pick, do you want to go indoor or outdoor? And there's only a US East server available to me. I'm on the West Coast-ish, the Southwest. So I don't know if there are more servers eventually planned or what. But yeah, like I said, only every once in a while is there somebody actually in there playing. And if we can get more players in there, it would probably be to the benefit of the game, because then the dev gets the data and the feedback they need to really improve on it.
Yeah. I know there's also a VR version of this game. Do you know if those versions play together or if they're completely separate?
That I don't know. That's a really good question. Yeah, I saw there is a VR variant of it. Looks great. I do not have the gear for VR at all. Don't have a headset, don't have a graphic card quite powerful enough to do it. So, I unfortunately don't know what it looks like on that side of it.
Releases as well, which is why I'm wondering, you know, if they play together, if they're walled off in their own little worlds.
Yeah, that's a perfectly valid question. Because if they are, you know, you may have everybody on one version and not the other.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that would explain that. I mean, they've got some stuff to refine, but the boilerplate's there. And I think that with time, effort, you know, feedback, some bug fixing, this could be a great game. It's just still very early access. Just give it some more time, some more effort. I think it could be good.
So it's got the potential, and as long as the developers keep working on it, stay in touch with what the community wants, and they listen to the people playing it, this should turn out decent.
Yes. A lot of the reviews echo what I've been saying, that basically the servers appear to be pretty much empty. So if there's a way to encourage some more folks to get in there and play test, that may also be to its aim, because it's kind of, you know, how do you get it to grow? How do you get it to blow up and you know, get these games really involved? If they can crack that nut, and that may just be, you know, some bug fixes and maybe a better server picker or something, then it could potentially grow into being a really decent battle royale game.
Nice. Well, we all know the early access games go up in price when they hit full release. I think they're saying They want to see this leave early access sometime in the first half of 2018. So I'm sure it'll still be early access for a few more months. At 10 bucks right now, do you think it's worth going for it with how cheap it is? Or is it better to just like keep an eye on it and hold off?
You know, so I mean, right now it's 30% off. I don't know how long that it's going to stay that way. So at $7, it becomes more of a try it. $10 is still kind of borderline. It's definitely not an insta buy for me, and I don't feel comfortable calling it a deny it when it's still so early in its release.
Yeah.
So it kind of just toes that line. You know, if they get past some of those stumbling blocks, it could turn into a great game. And so if you're looking for, you know, hopefully an opportunity to help shape the future of this game, if the vendor is responsive, it may be worth the $7. It's something different from PUBG, for example.
Yeah.
You know, it's
here's
it's
another way
else.
To phrase it. One of your complaints is lack of player base. Do you think that it is smart for people to pick this up? $7 on sale right now, $10 normally, not sure when the sale will be over, but would it be good in your eyes for people to take the risk on this to build the player base?
Gosh, the only way, okay, I can only speak for myself. I have a hard time issuing recommendations for other folks, but what I would say is if I had a few friends and it was a little cheaper still, then I think it would probably be one of those things where I could encourage a few people to play with me. But I think that the entry would have to be, I think, lower than $7 to justify that. If they had like a 4-pack for 15 or something, you know, I could see that being worth the money. $7 as it is, I would probably, let's assume the game was released today. If at $7, I'd definitely want my money back. Knowing it's early access, I feel like if I was paying, you know, $7 or even $10 for it today, I would really hope that they would take, you know, my recommendations and the recommendations of the others, playing it under advisement.
Yeah. Hopefully they don't pull a Culling and, you know, completely ignore everybody's feedback and then just scrap the game.
Right. Because if it ends up like that, then yeah, that's $7 you just basically lit on fire. But yeah, I don't know.
If nothing else, it sounds like something that we should at least keep our eyes on and see how it progresses.
Yes, I would agree with that statement completely.
Cool. Sounds good. Well, Royal, thank you so much for coming on and chatting about this game. What are your resolutions for 2018? See, instead of just asking for your final words, I'm you know, like a question.
Man, putting me on the spot. I used to say I resolve to make no resolutions. And I think that that's probably as close to that as I'm going to get today. But the truth of the matter is, I resolve to stop making resolutions that don't work.
All right, next game to talk about is called Way of the Passive Fist, developed and published by Household Games. It is releasing, quote, early 2018 on Xbox, Steam, and PS4. A mysterious figure known only as the Wanderer travels across the distant planet of Zircon 5, once prosperous mining colony that is now on the brink of destruction in the face of its dying star. With colonists disappearing and maniacs running wild, the Wanderer must stand firm, stay calm, and fight for answers in this unique modern brawler. Previewing this one for us, Tom Miller. Tom, how are you doing?
Ah, things are going just fine. It's New Year's Day over here, and I guess over there too, and it's been a pretty good one so far.
I mean, if this was like last night, it could have been New Year for me, but last year for you?
Yeah, I guess so.
But yeah, as it stands, it's New Year for both of us. I don't think you'll ever be ahead of me. You're just always dragging behind.
Yeah, well, who knows? I may have to travel somewhere at some point.
Oh, and then you'll show me for sure.
Yeah, I'll get back at you.
So this is an early preview. Again, we don't even have a release date or a price for this thing yet. But we have a preview build, and you've had some hands-on time with it. So tell me about it.
Yeah, so I've gotten the chance to spend some time with this. And the Way of the Passive Fist is, it reminds me of the video game equivalent of, there's that Simpsons episode where Homer becomes a boxer, and he just lets everybody wail on him until he gets tired and then pushes him over. Well, you don't actually let enemies wail on you, but you parry them or dodge, or you can like shoulder check them to get them away from you, but you never actually hit your enemies. You just kind of like let them exhaust themselves and then you just like poke them. So it changes the gameplay completely. And actually, if you combo together a few successful moves, you can get like this. You have like a cyborg hand or something that you need to charge through doing combos, and then you can just deck enemies with it. And it usually either one-shots them or takes away a big percentage of their health. But yeah, the more passive style of gameplay really changes it from your typical, like, you know, Final Fight, Streets of Rage kind of thing. It almost turns it into a sort of a pseudo rhythm game, because you learn to read all the enemies' tells, and then each one has like a different pattern that they go by. And when you have like a big group of enemies that you're fighting, they kind of take turns attacking you, and you need to kind of adapt the strategy to the different combinations of enemies, and new ones keep showing up. So I don't know. It makes it a really fun and unique style of gameplay that I don't know if I've really ever seen done before.
So is this more like, you know, you mentioned The Simpsons, is this more getting punched and getting beat up and then fighting back? Or is it more of like dodging the attacks, parrying the attacks, and then hitting them like once?
You got to dodge and parry.
And gotcha.
So you pretty much, I mean, there's two basic types of attacks. You have just the typical like punches and kicks and other like straightforward moves. And then some enemies have grapple attacks that you need to dodge out of the way of as well. Yeah. So it's kind of about learning how to read the different types of attacks. As far as presentation goes, I have no problem with any of it. The character designs are really like, they have a sense of humor. They're really colorful and well drawn and well animated. And the music just rocks. I cannot wait to get the soundtrack to it, because like every new track that showed up as I was playing it just made me want to blast it.
Hmm.
So I need to actually, I should have had the composer looked up before we started the call here. Maybe I can type that in real quick. I don't know if he's done anything else.
I mean, if you want to kill time while you're looking it up, how's it going?
Ori, it's Ori Falconer.
Ori Falconer.
Yeah, which is a pretty badass name. That is. Yes, me.
I wonder if he came from a blind forest.
Yeah, maybe. Or Orie. I don't know. O-R-I-E.
Are you just going to play the songs over your speakers there, and that's how we'll just do the music for this episode?
Yeah. Here it is. But yeah, anyway, the soundtrack kicks ass and it works perfectly with the game. The one complaint that I have with the game so far is that it does get pretty repetitive as the levels go on. There have been times when I'm playing it and it's like, yeah, okay, I kind of get the point of this level with this formations of enemies and stuff. And then it's like, I'm a third of the way done. And that's kind of a beat 'em up thing, you know. A lot of the time you end up kind of feeling like you're doing the same thing over and over. But the actual core gameplay is really fun. And another cool thing about it is that you have more control, more like customizability over the difficulty of the game. Like you can change a lot of different parameters and you get like a different title for each one that you, for like every little change that you make. So it's just a fun little detail.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Keeps it fresh, keeps it different every time you play.
You bet. And, you know, I mean, even just like on like the middle of the road difficulty, it is pretty challenging. So I'm sure that, you know, beat 'em up veterans, if they want a challenge, they'll be able to find it here by just cranking everything up to max and just praying.
Nice. Well, I know this is a preview, so we can't give any kind of solid verdict yet, but is this something we should be keeping our eyes on?
Yeah, I think it definitely is. It's a fun game that has a unique take on the beat-em-up genre, and you know, I think it's definitely going places. And if nothing else, it's absolutely worth checking out for that sweet soundtrack.
Sounds good. So, Ori and the Blind Forest soundtrack.
That's a good one too. But yeah, Way of the Passive Fist. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm, this one looks really, really cool. It looks straight out of like a '90s arcade game.
Yeah,
visually, I am eager to see more about this one for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Tom, thank you as always for coming on and chatting about this game. And instead of any final words, what are your resolutions for 2018?
Damn it, that was the one time I'd prepared something.
My resolution is to be prepared with final words.
My
resolution is to tell you what my final thoughts were anyway, and this is them.
Yeah. The big thing for me that I'd want to share here is, like, I'm a musician, you know, and I'm doing a thing called Weekly Beats, where we try to make a new track every week of the year. And so that's, like, my big challenge for myself is to get that going. And hopefully I'll have some good tunes to share with you as the year progresses.
Nice. And where can we hear those?
It's just at, I believe it's weeklybeats.com. It might be, hang on, Weekly Beats. Yeah.
You were not prepared.
Yeah, not yet. weeklybeats.com. It's going to be, my name there is Tom Appella. So if you look that up, you should be able to find it, and there'll be some stuff up there.
All right, next game to talk about is called Outbreak, The New Nightmare, developed and published by Dead Drop Studios. It released January 3rd on Xbox One for $8.99. Enter an unforgiving survival horror experience as you fight for your life against oppressive odds. The horrors of the Arzt Memorial Hospital were just the beginning of the outbreak. As the infection spread across the city, local law enforcement fell quickly. You now find yourself trapped in a hellscape with only a few remaining survivors. Scavenge the environment for supplies, face off against the undead, and do anything it takes to survive. You have only one life. Make it count. When horror comes up, who else is going to cover this one? Cole Martin, welcome back. How are you doing?
I mean, I guess you could get, like, an alternative Cole, but it wouldn't be a good idea. There is one.
It was just Christmas, so we could have gotten a stocking full of Cole.
I don't think they make stockings for me to fit in. I'm fat.
Kill me.
This is a carnage level punning.
It really is. So anyway, Outbreak, The New Nightmare. What is this game?
This game is a survival horror, obviously, but it's very heavily inspired by retro Resident Evil type games in that it's really difficult to control. It does have tank controls. Just want to go ahead and clear the air, because anybody that's heard me review these games before knows how badly I hate tank controls. Tank controls are the worst. However, this does let you choose whether you want classic, really hard tank controls, or if you want modern tank controls where you do at least move when you point in a direction. So I'm a pussy. I chose modern. But your character, like, when you aim, she stops. Or he, if you pick one of the guys. But they stop. And then you have to aim, and you can't shoot and move at the same time. This is I don't want to say sequel. It's not really a follow-up to the first Outbreak, but it is in that same universe. The original Outbreak was top-down, 8-bit pixel, you know, survival horror with the tank controls and all that. The New Nightmare is actually a 3D counterpart. It does take place in the same universe, but it is a different set of 6 survivors. And it also takes place in a different part of the same town. So,
and it's not this, pixelated.
And it's not pixelated. It is fully 3D modeled, which is pretty big undertaking for a lone developer. And yeah, every
this
time
isn't a small team game. This is a single person game.
Every time I load this up and I see the note from the developer at the beginning, and I'm reminded, oh yeah, this was one lone wolf just tearing into this game. I'm incredibly impressed by how much there is to it, because the campaign alone has a tutorial and 5 chapters. There is a horde mode onslaught with 5 more chapters, and there is also a experiment mode with different boss waves and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
5 more chapters of those.
Wow.
5 different scenarios. So, you know, not including the tutorial, you get 15 different chapters to this game and 3 different ways to play it.
And what, 6 characters in the game?
6 characters. Each one has their own, like, kind of buffs and weaknesses as well. So, one character, for example, will automatically start with a pistol or a shotgun. Another character may have additional loadout or inventory slots. The inventory system is literally ripped from an old Resident Evil game. I mean, you press B, it comes up, you have the little health bar, it tells you how you're doing, you can equip whatever weapons and items you find or you have available to you, you have to pick up your ammo and healing, and you can combine items and use them to, you know, make better med kits and things like that. But the inventory, even though I know it's supposed to be modeled on the old Resident Evil type games, it bothers me that the characters can carry so little shit.
Oh, God.
This is an apocalypse. Pick up a backpack. There's going to be a backpack somewhere.
So default is what? 4 item slots you could carry?
There
and that includes whatever you have 6. Equipped.
Yes. It includes whatever's equipped. It includes your ammo does not go to the item either that it's for. It takes up a separate inventory slot.
Mm-hmm.
If you have, say, ointment and bandages, you have to have those 2 inventory slots for those and a 3rd empty for the medicine to go to once you combine them. So it's
I didn't need an extra empty slot.
Did you not? Because no. I had it come up and not do it.
Because I had like, in the tutorial, I dabbled with it briefly, since we'll talk about performance in a little bit, but, I picked up the bandages or the ointment and whatever, the 2 items in the tutorial that you have to combine, and I had to drop an item just to pick up the 2nd one, and I was able to just combine them, and it took the slot of the 1st item, and then I just picked up the axe that I had to drop.
I wonder if it was a different character.
I just used the default first person. First character. I don't know.
Because it wouldn't combine them for me until I dropped an extra item and had a 3rd slot.
Maybe you just don't know what you're doing.
I probably broke it.
And I've been suckered into this, thinking you know horror games, and we've been wrong this whole time.
Like, if there's a way to break it and do it wrong, I'll be the one to do it. So, I probably did something wrong.
Like, we task you to cover a horror game, and you're just...
all kinds of shit.
We task you to cover a horror game, and you're just like, I'm going to watch Dumb and Dumber instead. Close enough.
That's a horrible movie.
What?
I don't like Dumb and Dumber.
What? How can you hate the original Dumb and Dumber?
My humor style is not Dumb and Dumber.
Oh, my God. Well, anyway, there's a lot to do in this game made by a single person. How well does it play?
I didn't have any, like, apart from where I clearly broke it for the inventory, I didn't have any bugs. I didn't have any kind of issues. The levels are absolutely huge, and they're sprawling. And when I played the original, like, campaign missions, I didn't have a flashlight unless I had my pistol equipped and was aiming with the pistol. But when I played the experiments later, the character kind of had like a glow coming from her chest, like she had a flashlight. So I don't know if maybe it's just different or if there was an update between when I played one and when I played the other.
I don't know. I know, but, for me to activate it, I think it was click on the 1 thumbstick and the flashlight came on.
Yeah, mine was, well, maybe it was a character again, because I was playing around with the different characters, but yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, I was just like, everything's dark and I'm confused. I have a horrible sense of direction and I get lost really easily, but at least there's the Y button brings up the map and you can see where you're going, where items you have found are that you've left behind. So if you do run into trouble and you're running low on an item, you can go back and, you know, pick it up again and be okay. Like I was constantly running out of ammo and having to go back to where I had seen ammo stashed before that I just couldn't carry. Or melee weapons, which are wonderful and helpful. Because my aim is... If you don't move around too much, the aim is not bad. Like, as soon as you pull the trigger to aim, it will automatically aim at the zombies. Well, they don't call them zombies in this game. They're monstrosities. But it will aim at them automatically, and you can just kind of lay into the trigger, and eventually they die. But there's an addition to this one, given its 3D nature, that was not in the first outbreak, and that's that there are crawlers. And the crawlers kind of hurt my feels, because I couldn't aim at them to save my life. And I did far better if I just paused, unequipped and punched them. I can punch the crawlers, which is not a good idea when they're on fire or full of poison.
Oh, God.
But, you know, I made mistakes and I died. But I tried. Mistakes have so many mistakes were made.
Oh, man.
But that's part of the glory of this kind of game is that, you know, when you do die, you do have to start that particular campaign over again. But your character earns XP and they level up. And so you can eventually get to where you're buying new gear and stuff for them.
I was going to say, it feels like this is a game that kind of encourages you to replay the missions repeatedly to build up experience and level your character.
So that you can finally beat it.
Yeah.
Because there are 4 difficulties as well. And the last difficulty, Nightmare difficulty, is a one-hit kill immediately.
Oh, nice. Fun.
If you get hit at all, which you will get hit because everything is dark as fuck. you do have warning that the you know, monstrosities are coming for you, and that you can, if you're wearing headphones, you can tell, oh, I can hear one coming from the right, or I can hear one coming from the left or behind me or whatever. It helps, because otherwise you don't know until they're right up on you where that little bit of light might be. The enemies are also a constant onslaught. Even in campaign, they just keep coming until you find your way out. So if you wanted to just sit there and shoot zombies to level up until you run out of ammo and then go at it with your fists and then get out, you could do that. You could effectively do that. You could probably level up pretty well that way. Or you could just go to survival mode and survive and do the same thing. Or attempt to survive if you're me. It is worth noting too, because of the whole, you know, Resident Evil vibe, that you cannot control the camera.
Yeah,
I think
that was one of my issues with the game, is that it not only is it a fixed camera, but it seemed to change a lot more frequently than I was expecting.
Yeah.
It seemed like
every time you turn a corner, it changes and you're like, wait, calm down.
Yeah, like walking down one hallway and I had 4 different camera cuts, which, you know, wouldn't be too bad. But when you mix that with tank style controls, even the modern tank style where it's, you know, based on the direction that you're pointing the controller in, once you're holding a certain direction and the camera angle changes, your character keeps walking in the right direction. But if you need to turn in any direction, just because, you know, you might be walking right, but you're holding down left.
Mm-hmm.
It throws you off. So you kind of have to let go of the analog stick and then start moving again, which kind of threw me off. I would say
that's probably not as severe if you're using the classic tank controls.
Yeah. Because forward is always forward.
Yeah. So like that would probably make more sense with the cuts but when you're using the modern, it's definitely confusing. And I spend a lot of time going in circles.
Yeah. Either way, I
don't mean like in circles around the board. I mean literal circles in an area.
I had that while trying to attack a zombie that was next to me. I like accidentally had the analog stick slightly in a direction. I'm just slowly turning away from the zombie as I'm swinging my axe. Like, why aren't I hitting? Oh, because I'm turning.
One thing I did like as well is the backstory for this game is absolutely incredibly deep. There's a lot to it. Normally with zombie games, it's like, oh, shit happened. We don't know what. Everybody's dead. Bye. You know, good luck. Because once you start adding in reasons for it, it falls apart. The whole zombie thing does. They did a really good job, I think, with this one, though, in that the backstory is there was a really bad drought over the summer. Water had to be rationed. Hygiene kind of fell to the wayside because of the water rationing, and that led to an influx of diseases, and surprise, one of them became a zombie virus.
Yay!
One thing that I liked about that is that you weren't locked into getting through this campaign to learn the story. You can learn the whole story of these characters without finishing the game. You can just go to the story tab and it's all right there. So if you're really, really struggling and you still want to know what happens, just read it. But I think even reading it, I read it even before I started because I'm I do odd things like that. because I wanted to go into it knowing, like, why did the characters get here? What's this whole, I was already familiar with the backstory of the water rationing and all that because of the first outbreak, which also had the option to go in and just read the story. So I wanted to see, like, how these characters differed from the first group. And that helped to just be able to go in and be like, okay, oh, this character was a SWAT soldier or whatever, you know, and know it helped choose who I was going to play with and how I was going to play with them because I knew where they came from and their place in the story.
Well,
so I thought it helped.
All of that said and done, $9. What is your verdict on this one?
I give it a pretty solid try. It's on sale actually on Xbox right now for $8. Yay.
So grab it before launch and save that.
$2 before launch. And additionally, you can actually get a bundle on Xbox with The New Nightmare and the original Outbreak. The original one, I think, was $4.99 or $5.99. I can't remember. I'm going to say $4.99. And then this one for, you know, roughly $8 on sale. So for under $15, you get two really good, you know, retro-inspired tinky games. And they'll keep you busy for a long-ass time because there's a lot to explore here.
Indeed. I do agree that it is a try-it with the caveat that you need to be into old-school Resident Evil games to really get into this game. If you played Resident Evil 1, even if it was like Resident Evil 1 HD, the remake, and you didn't like it, you will not like this game. And given the fact that the Resident Evil games were made by teams of hundreds of people, and this game was made by a single person, it's clearly not going to have the same level of polish as the Resident Evil series. So you've got to go in knowing that not only is this an old school survival horror game, but there's some areas where it's kind of rough around the edges.
Yeah. I also want to mention that there's, on the Steam version of this, the New Nightmare, there's multiplayer co-op. And the Xbox did not get the multiplayer co-op edition. You can play single player. And I saw some people saying you could play it with AI. I fucked around in the controls and did not see where to set up the AI on Xbox. So, it's probably for the better because the AI were apparently not very good.
No. Maybe if it does well, we'll see a multiplayer update come to Xbox. Fingers crossed.
I would really like to see this get co-op. I think it would just be a lot more enjoyable if you have somebody watching your back.
No.
So otherwise it's a really solid try though.
Well, fingers crossed, I guess. But one last game to talk about, and I'm going to make you stick around for this. It's called Dragon Fang Z, The Rosen Dungeons of Time, developed and published by Toydia Inc. Released December 19th on the Switch for $24.99. So clearly you're going to enjoy this review because you have, you know, like dozens of Switches. I am
so involved in the Switch.
Rose is a human and a half dragon. One day she wanders into the world called Tree of Time with a fairy instead of a parent. The treasure falls asleep deep under the dungeon in the world. So then try the dungeon to return to their home with the power of treasure. Your courage and growth will be the power to clear the dungeon. I love these descriptions. Like, we go over this with the ACA Neo Geo games or any game that's like primarily developed in Japan and gets, you know, I don't want to say a slapdash localization, but it's, I think they're charming. It takes me back Google to the Translate. 80s and the 90s. I know a lot of people call it English. Some people don't like that term, but it's, I don't know, it works with me. So. But our friend Pernell Vaughn was planning on coming on to cover this one, but his holiday travels have kept him away from the show until I'm gone for MAGFest. So he emailed in a couple of bullet points and I fleshed it out. So here we go. Dragon Fang Z is a top-down crawling roguelike, or dungeon crawling roguelike, very similar in style to the Shirin the Wanderer and Pokemon Mysterious Dungeon series. Traverse randomized floors, equip weapons and armor to get stronger. Enemies can also drop something called fangs, which have a passive ability, an activated ability, plus another perk if you choose to offer it or sacrifice the item. For example, one item, if you equip it, will give you like five, you know, a bonus 5 hit point increase. Once the ability is ready, which, depending on the fang, it might have different activation requirements, but a lot of times it's like attack someone and it builds a charge or it reduces the charge by one. Once it's ready, for example, that one could heal you for 50 hit points. Or if you offer it, which you sacrifice it, you just pretty much get rid of the item completely. It gives you a permanent +3 mechanic, you know, boost. I think it's a really cool mechanic where one item can have multiple uses depending on how you want to use it.
It gives you the opportunity to play it your way.
Yeah. But let's see. Pernell was planning to cover this one, but he's out of town for the holiday. You could tell I pre-wrote all of this. Since let's see, I played a bit as well, so like I said, gonna fill in the blanks as best as I can. His first bullet point is the translation patch was released and it still needs a bit of work, but they seem to be further patching it in the future. In regards to the translation, I'd noticed a few typos myself and some awkward sentences. Like when you get to the exit to move to the next floor, the choices are proceed, which, you know, okay, and the other is stay as it is. So, yeah, translation could use a little bit of work. His next one, traditional roguelikes usually use bottlenecking in corridors as a strategy to the game, which, you know, if enemies are coming at you, you have a bunch of them in a room, you back up, you let them come into the doorway, and you just take them on one at a time. This game turns that mechanic on its head by requiring the player to fight in an open 8-square grid. Each attack dealt and received boosts your Brave, which powers characters, Fang's abilities, and weapons abilities. So if you're in an open area, you'll see a glow around you, and the more you attack while in that glow, the stronger you are. So you get more powerful attacks in open area instead of being tucked in surrounded by walls. It depletes when you're not in combat, so it encourages constant exposed combat, and I think it's an excellent shakeup to the genre. There's also a dragon time mechanic where you only have so many turns to spend on a floor before the time is up. Once the time is up, you lose hit points for every move spent on the floor, and everything in this game uses up a turn. Attack a monster, it's a turn. Move a square, it's a turn. Use a potion, it's a turn. Equip an item, it's a turn. Some of the fangs allow you to extend the time, the dragon time, when you move to a new floor, or there's potions and books that restore. Every time you move to a new floor, it adds, I want to say, 150 dragon time to what you have, but it goes quick. Like, you might think, oh, I have, you know, 200 some turns to move, and you'll walk halfway through a room, deal with a couple of monster attacks, and then you're like, oh shit, I have 30. I better find the exit before I start dying. There is a warehouse to use in this game, which is far more challenging to utilize than in other roguelikes. It requires a warehouse box to be found in the dungeon, which is surprisingly uncommon. Basically, the warehouse is, if you find items, if you find a particularly powerful item and you have a warehouse box, you'll put the item into the box and it basically stores it for a future play. Because it's a roguelike, every time you die, you start over completely fresh. No items. Bottom level, you know, you just start all over again. So this allows you to kind of give yourself a head start with, you know, a nice selection of items if you were to find these boxes. There's actually a few different boxes in the game as well besides the warehouse box. One of them, every time you put an item in it, it would restore hit points. Some of them, like, you would put an item in and it just changes it to something random. So all these different boxes, you know, another way to alter the game and, you know, change it up for you. There are NPCs in the game, but they only seem to provide tips. They don't actually support the player via in-game abilities, backup, or skills. I do wish for the option to have allies in dungeons at times. I agree on this one. The NPCs sometimes just feel like a reason to have story to break up the dungeon crawling. So you get to a new floor, there's a humorous little dialogue and skit, and then they'll warp back to the main hub area. But when you talk to them, they'll just kind of give you tips or hints, or like, this is how you use this item, or this is how you use this ability. They don't join you. They just seem to be there and to break up the dungeon crawling. Bosses are brutal in this game, and on subsequent attempts to work the dungeon, you have to beat them again. This is great for challenge files, but not so much for people hoping to experience constant progress. First boss was definitely a test for me between the boss, summoned creatures, the abilities he's using, burning through all my potions and abilities. The bosses in this game do not fuck around. It was a pretty long, challenging battle, but I eventually got through it. Yay.
Are the bosses limited by the move counter too, or?
No, because the move counter only is really just you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. When the time is up, it doesn't affect the monsters at all. It's just you. Fun. A weird issue that I ran into with the game, if your Switch is not docked and you're trying to use a Pro Controller, the Joy-Cons cannot be attached to the system.
Hmm.
Yeah, I had, you know, I have a tiny little dock that I have sitting on my desk. I stuck the Switch in there, still had the Joy-Cons attached to it, tried using the Pro Controller, couldn't do anything. I had to remove the Joy-Con to be able to use the Pro Controller. Otherwise, it treats the Joy-Con attached as the primary input, and you can't do shit otherwise. Kind of annoying, but nothing horrible, because it worked fine when it was docked. It's just if it's undocked and the controllers are attached. Purnell's final note here is, honestly, one of the truest forms of roguelike to come along in a long time, with some nice shakeups to the concept. Could be a bit too repetitive and difficult for the average player. For fans of roguelikes or those interested in roguelikes only, casuals need not apply. Definitely agree with that. This is not an easy game. It will test your roguelike abilities, but I think it's a lot of fun, plenty replayable, lots of fun twists to the genre. I think it's a solid pickup for the price.
Nice.
So, yeah. That is it. I hope everyone had a fun New Year and enjoyed listening to us ramble about games for a bit. We are taking a full week off as I go to MAGFest. Music this episode is going to be some people performing at MAGFest, like Lonely Rolling Stars, Viking Guitar, Danimal Cannon. So, good music. Final words. I've been asking everyone all episode, what are your New Year's resolutions?
It's actually related to art, not gaming, but I want to create my first coloring book this year.
Ooh.
Yeah, so that's my goal, is to create a coloring book by myself.
What kind of coloring book are you going to make?
I don't know. I have a penchant for drawing penises with stunner shades, but I don't think that'd make a good coloring book.
I mean, it could be something that you get at, like, Spencer's. Remember that place? An adult coloring book.
Well, my plan is to release it as an ebook at least. So I could maybe do a mini, like, starter coloring book of Mr. Stunner on his adventures. But otherwise, I'm not really sure. I tend to have a very, like, childish, cartoony kind of art aesthetic when I'm not drawing penises. So
so it'll be,
it will probably be something
happy, more like, and kid-friendly, and then dicks.
Yeah. Well, I don't know that I would say, like, kid-friendly, but I do tend to be a little more of a surrealist with art, so it will probably be pretty surreal.
Well, if it happens, be sure to let us know.
I will.
Cool.
I'll be here anyway, so let's
true, true. And I'm going away for a couple days, so fuck off, everyone.